This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Imagine you drop into a new place. You look around. If you see flowers, trees blooming, grassy growing, grasses growing and the shrubs are in flower, doesn't mean that the land around you is healthy. Science Friday director Charles Berquist visited Duke Farms in Hillsboro, New Jersey, to learn about what makes a space sustainable at what once was the estate of one of the world's richest men.
In 1893, James Buchanan Duke began work on an estate in central New Jersey. He made his millions in tobacco. For his country getaway, Duke wanted things just so. Hundreds of workers built hills where there used to be flat land. He dug lakes. He imported thousands of trees. He planted exotic plants from around the world.
You would have seen a very pretty manicured park, lots of lawns.
That's Tom Allmendinger, the head ecologist at Duke Farms.
Greenery isn't necessarily all good. Just because it's green doesn't mean it's beneficial for wildlife.
Duke created a garden that was the envy of his fellow millionaires. Now, Tom's changing it. The estate's now a park and environmental training ground. It's managed by the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation. Tom's trying to make the place more natural, more sustainable, a place where wildlife can live.
The forest patches were degraded, but you wouldn't have noticed it because they were full of exotic shrubs from other countries that were not beneficial to wildlife.
We hop into an electric golf cart and head to a spot they called the Old Foundation, a place where J.B. Duke started to build a four-story French chateau, then stopped. Trees are growing through the foundation. Tom says that vultures nest there. He points from the topmost plaza down to the Great Lawn. Think Downton Abbey or Versailles, but with meadows at the bottom.
This whole elaborate terraced lawns out in front of a 15-acre Great Lawn, and these balustrades and fountains and stairways. You can see the vision that J.B. Duke had for his property was about the landscapes and about the natural areas. But the 15-acre meadow, again, that used to be a pure lawn. It was like one of the frisbee lawns in Central Park.
After J.B. Duke's death, the property went to his daughter, Doris. People called her the richest girl in the world. She lived on the estate until her death in 1993. A staff of over 200 helped run the grounds. Doris Duke maintained the gardens, including greenhouses filled with tropical orchids and other exotic plants. But after she died, her will didn't focus on orchids or greenhouses. It said that the property should be used, quote, to protect endangered species of all kinds and for agricultural and horticultural purposes, including research, unquote. It took a few years, but the foundation decided to change how the property was run, to make the land around the estate more environmentally sound. It looked nice, but there were hundreds of hungry deer, disturbed soil, and exotic and invasive species. It was hardly sustainable. Nora Wagner is the head of public programs at Duke Farms. She says the decision to shift the focus of the property to sustainability and environmental education was a relatively simple one.
The thought was, how do we use this property best for the preservation of flora and fauna and communicate that to the largest number of people possible in a way that doesn't harm our land.
Now the staff are working to control the deer. They've yanked out exotic species. The greenhouses grow native plants. There are still orchids here, but they're mostly ones that naturally grow in the eastern U.S. And the main greenhouse, called the Orchid Range, is the first LEED Platinum certified conservatory in the country.
It's funny, it's a conservatory, so it's a contrived environment, but it's actually as green as you can get by the LEED rating scale.
Passive solar heating, soil heaters, water-efficient misters and rain cisterns all give the place an environmental boost. And more people are visiting now than when it was just an orchid showplace. There's even a Twitter feed just to give status updates on the parking lots.
Since May 2012, we've had almost a million people come in. We're reaching more people and making more of an impact. So I think it was kind of a no-brainer.
Tom pays attention to every detail of the park's natural processes. Plants, soil, waste, anything that comes into or out of the park ecosystem. Today, it's the algae.
Our lakes are very shallow. They get very warm, and there's a lot of nutrients with them, so they call them productive. It's a nice way of saying that they're hard to manage.
But the lakes need to be managed. Too much algae would choke all the oxygen. Often, chemicals are used to control algae in ponds, but Tom works to minimize chemical use. Instead, he uses naturally occurring bacteria, combined with harvesting, pulling up the algae with a big machine. A team is out on the lake with an amphibious vehicle. It looks like an army tank got mixed up with a paddle boat and then stuck a rake on its front end. It slowly plows through the water, lifting out goopy strands of algae. Once the algae dries a bit, it's composted and used as fertilizer elsewhere on the grounds, maybe in the greenhouses or in the community garden plots. Tom says the lakes are all growing closer to being a natural habitat. They host otters, mink, and other species. How does Tom know if their efforts are working? Well, he says part of the answer lies in finding everyday species that weren't here before because the land was so unnatural.
There's things like rufous-sided towhee, common yellowthroats, brown thrashers, these birds that should have been more ubiquitous here that are now. And it's taken, you know, almost a decade having rabbits on the property. There was no cover before from the hives, so they were very vulnerable to their predators. Now we see rabbits, a lot of rabbits. We see chipmunks, you know. Chipmunks are a pretty normal species in most eastern forests. There are a lot of unique changes that are happening. It took a while. There was a lag period, you know, when I wasn't sure if what we were doing was working. And then I guess within the last 2 or 3 years, it's been overabundantly evident that it's progressively getting better. When I actually look at old pictures, I'm like, that's when I really get that aha moment. Like, wow, it's not the anticipation waiting for something to happen. It's already happened. It's maintaining what's happened and moving it forward. That's our next goal.
Other goals for the future include improving the floodplain of the Raritan River right next door. They also want to do more work on agroecology, putting farm back in Duke Farms. But Tom says that as with all restoration projects, some of the results might not be seen until his children or grandchildren.
So one of the things that I hope people take away is just an appreciation. Because unless you appreciate something, you're not going to want to protect it. So I think for me, it's people reconnecting and valuing nature. Even at a base level, it doesn't have to be in depth. It doesn't have to be you go home and plant a bunch of native plants, rip out all your exotic plants. Just valuing your natural areas, valuing plants and trees and clean air and understanding those qualities that make life wonderful.
For Science Friday, I'm Charles Bergquist.
Do you have a favorite photo of your own wilderness experience or your favorite place? Please share it with us. You can share your photos of the wilderness that you like on our Facebook page at SciFry.